Little shunk.
Welcome once again to Chill Filter, the podcast where we drink whiskey so you don't have to. But you probably should, and you probably are, and sometimes it's your job. But we're glad you're here. Really quick business this week. Hit us up on patreon.com/chillfiltered. Great way to support us. You can join in our drink-alongs, get some fun samples, get some times where you can drink along with us. In fact, we're recording later today a drink-along. So join in that way. It would be great. I think that's all the business for this week. We're at friggin' A. Smith Bowman Distillery. And we are really excited about that. We got, I'm going to introduce him in a moment. We got David Bach here, and we're excited to drink the Cask Strength Batch 3 and the Abraham Bowman French Oak Series. And we're excited for you guys to be here for that. So before I say anything else, David, how you liking Fredericksburg as compared to your prior place at New Orleans?
You know, it's a little bit slower pace of life down here.
Totally is.
Here, I guess. It's really nice, though. I am enjoying it. I'm enjoying the community that's here. My kids can ride their bikes to school, so it's really
awesome.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Really sweet. And this opportunity to run and focus on A. Smith Bowman is just such a huge honor. And yeah. I'm really trying my best to, like you, hopefully we'll see and taste, put out some of the most premium products and great stuff that we can do.
Yeah. So
and how long have you been here?
I've been here, I want to say 2 years. Two years up here.
Nice.
I think that's right.
Yeah. And remind me, prior, what were you doing?
Okay, so do you want to go all the way back? Or you just want to go like...
Sazerac House.
Sazerac House? Yeah. All right, so I had a neighbor across the street. She was the events coordinator at Sazerac House. And she's like, hey, we're building this thing called Sazerac House in New Orleans.
Nice.
And we need a distiller. Do you know how to make alcohol? And I go, yes, I do.
Nice.
Perfect.
Are
you
just a neighbor?
Yeah. Just my neighbor across the street. And nice. And so I went in and I interviewed for it and got the position. And so at that point, the Sazerac House was still being built. And
cool.
So they were like, oh, can you make sure that the tanks are going the right spot? And if they have questions about how that stuff needs to be put aligned,
that's
you know,
cool.
Can you manage that? And I was like, yeah. And then hired that team, trained them on how to make rye whiskey,
nice.
And then started pushing that out. And so I was down at the Sazerac House, I want to say 5 years.
Okay.
And then after that, the master distiller here at A. Smith Bowman, mm-hmm. Brian Pruitt,
mm-hmm.
He got a promotion to oversee multiple facilities, and they brought me up from New Orleans to focus solely on A. Smith Bowman.
That's so cool. Yeah. So wait, what? I guess I should know. I feel like I should know. What is Sazerac House? Like, what was that about?
So Sazerac House is because, so we are part of a larger organization called Sazerac,
mm-hmm.
which is a privately held company that's based in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Sazerac House was created to be a complimentary experience in New Orleans where people could come in and see some of the brands that are in the portfolio as
cool.
well as mainly focused on the cocktail and the
nice.
Cocktail history because
nice.
Sazerac
yeah.
or New Orleans is known for their cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So part of the classic Sazerac cocktail is rye whiskey,
mm-hmm.
Sazerac rye whiskey. And so we created a distillery there so that when you're going through and you're learning about all these cocktails, you could also stop into the distillery, talk to my team or the team that I had down there about making alcohol and like talk to real distillers and
that's cool.
smell the fermentations,
totally
see
nice.
The distillate coming off the still, all those pieces.
Yeah.
And like instead of it just being like a touchscreen or a show, it's
mm-hmm.
like you're really talking to someone that knows what
yeah.
they're doing and how they're doing every day.
So that's pretty cool.
That was kind of
yeah,
a neat experience,
awesome.
Yeah.
So did those, that distillate, did that get into any specific Sazerac related bottlings?
So like I said, that was what, 5 years ago.
Mm.
We had some stuff happen at the beginning. So those barrels should be coming of
nice.
Age pretty soon.
That's
and
pretty
so
cool.
Those will be Sazerac rye barrels
no way.
Made at the Sazerac House.
That's cool.
So
that'll be really neat
yeah.
when those come out. Hopefully
yeah.
They'll invite me down to see how those turned out.
You think they'll age a little longer and make some handy out of that?
That would be really
that
neat.
Would
that
be
would
cool.
be a,
yeah.
quite an honor to see that go
yeah.
through. But, you know, since it is, you know, as you know, when you move – when you try to make a recipe at a different location, it's always going to taste a little bit different.
Totally.
We did our best to try to make it in line with mm-hmm. everyone, so right. it'll be interesting to see
That's
how
cool.
they turn out.
Yeah, nice. And interesting to see if it would be a separate release entirely or if mm-hmm. it would try to be merged with the main Sazerac line.
We got a lot of questions about that, uh-huh. and my answer every time, which I want to give now, is we'll see.
Yeah, that's
we
cool.
Got some time. We got some time to wait, and we got yeah. some time to see.
But
so
you were laying the brickwork, though.
I was creating it and yeah. showing that team on how to do it and what to try to...
Yeah.
Aim for.
Yeah, now time.
Since you were making it, I'm thinking sixth BTAC.
Yeah, it's yeah. time. It's finally you get a yeah. double George Berry Stag. That's cool. So what I love about Ace with Bowman and this kind of promotion for you to come up here is Ace with Bowman makes solid whiskey, solid bourbon, but also is very experimental. And I think if I were to guess, and you don't have to answer this, but I think Brian's, one of Brian's things of how he did so well in his career is he experimented a ton.
That's 100% right. Mm-hmm. Brian did experiment a ton, and he left me a great legacy of barrels and experiments.
That's
that
cool.
went through, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this French oak right here,
yeah.
This is not Brian's, but it's yeah. Truman Cox's.
No way.
It's his experiment, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So he put it in, and this is, when you talk about distilling, you always talk about, you're making juice for the next generation.
Yeah.
That's exactly
that's
right what's happening. So mm-hmm. A lot of what Brian laid down, I'm going to get the honor of releasing as these
that's
Abrahams,
cool.
and then I'm continuing in his... tradition, mm-hmm. let's say, of continuing to experiment and continuing to try new things
yeah.
and see what I can do to tweak on lessons I've learned from what he's done mm-hmm. and more experimentation. So we have a lot of stuff in the warehouse,
mm-hmm.
aging, trying stuff out and seeing what's going to happen.
That's Very awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Some of it doesn't work out, but a lot of it does.
But you get to be I assume maybe he'll be here in 15 years. But maybe if you move on to something else in Sazerac or whatever, you're starting experiments, I'm sure,
that's
for
right.
people in the future too.
That's exactly right. And that's mm-hmm. the part. So the stuff I'm laying down, right now, I'm laying stuff down. We can go take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Some experimental runs and I hope to be here for mm-hmm. when those mature out.
That's cool.
But that might not. It might be the guy that's next in line.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always kind of interesting and you're always trying to make, again, the best product and the best thing.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to assume you can't talk about those experiments, but...
I was about to. You saw that? I had to, catch myself.
That's funny.
In general, what are your favorite types of experiments? What experiments excite you? What would you be interested in doing?
Is it always wood, or is it,
Wood's nice.
Uh-huh.
Wood is nice. It's an easier one than if you were to change a mash bill.
Yeah.
And you kind of have a better idea. When you start changing around yeast,
mm-hmm.
that's really
Ooh,
when it gets interesting.
That's cool.
So you could change yeast around, grain bills change around. I like experimenting with grain bills as well.
Nice.
And then I'm starting to put my toe in for different types of yeast and different kind of things
that's cool.
That's cool.
But I do. Not that barrels aren't exciting and wood is not exciting, because so much flavor does come from those, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always constantly looking for new things, looking to try to work with new styles of barrels and new finishes and just find those things. But it's also really neat to start with the straight distillate and
mm-hmm.
see if I can improve on the distillate or change the distillate to make something even more interesting.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Especially the yeast part gets me super interested, because we all know that you look at Four Roses and they got five yeast strains and they're
so
all different.
That's
yeah.
right. There's so mm. much. There's so many things that you can do to change,
mm-hmm.
and that one little change is going to affect it so
right.
incredible.
That's
you
so
talk
cool.
about in 15 years,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea if the yeast I'm picking today
Whoa.
Is going to look good in 15
mm-hmm.
years
right.
or not, right? And so it's just, it's neat.
Yeah. You were talking about... when you were in New Orleans and you were working there, that liquid that you're aging down there, that's aging in New Orleans, right? It's in barrels in New Orleans?
So
that's a great question.
That's a great question. Well, I don't think I know how to answer that. There is no. Okay.
That's okay.
We're going to say this. So because of its, the Sazerac house is in the French Quarter,
uh-huh.
Across the street from literally the French Quarter. It's in the Central Business District, but it's in the French Quarter.
Nice. Yeah.
And so the fire department didn't want us
storing
lots of volume of barrels in that place. And and because the New Orleans is so old and so compact, you don't have room for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what we did was we decided to send them actually to Buffalo Trace's Rick House.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So what I'll do, or what we're doing, is we'll fill barrels. When we have a truckload, we'll fill the truckload and then send them up to Buffalo Trace. They'll store them. They'll let them age there. Again, we're continuing to try to make it taste like Sazerac rye, so we want the same type of aging environment that's happening.
Right.
And then, boom, we'll figure out if we're going to bring them back down to New Orleans or what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But they all are stamped Sazerac House, Sazerac
rye. That's cool.
Very cool.
That was leading into a bigger question where I wanted your personal take on...
On the French wine blight of the mid-1850s or whatever. He knows. I can assure you he knows. But go on.
You're going to have to educate me.
And I will later.
But your personal experience with maybe aging liquid in different environments. Like, you've moved. You're here now in Virginia. What would the aging process be like? What would the Rick House differences be like? What could you expect in terms of difference in geographical locations?
It's so scary.
Oh, I believe it.
So when we, because we're expanding here and we're breaking into new warehouses. And so currently when I came in, we had, what, 3 warehouses full of barrels. And now I have 5 warehouses, right? So we're growing. We're making more. We're trying to get more John Jay on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we go into a different warehouse, you have to expect that there's going to be a different aging environment.
Mm.
We don't use traditional rick houses here. Our rick houses and our barrel warehouses are
cool.
Are brick, right?
Oh.
And so some of them are below grade.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a lot of fluctuation in temperature as it goes through, like you would see in a typical rick house, and a lot of airflow.
Yeah.
So it does give us a different barrel profile.
Yeah.
Like our cask strength, which we're going to try, we have no problem getting barrels off that are extremely high proof into the 140s, right? Because I believe that, like, you know, that aging environment.
Mm-hmm.
We're also right here on the Piedmont fault line of this in Virginia, and so that also plays with it, right? With the fresh air coming in from the Potomac and the coast knocking against the mountains, so it's all part of it. And that was another thing to think about when we were, at least in New Orleans, was, you know, that aging environment would be extremely different than Kentucky.
Totally.
The humidity, the heat that comes on, there is no real winter there. If there is, it's like a week, right? So to try to narrow down the volume of variables, it's best to try to keep as much as you can to try to be the same, to try to get the same product. Because I don't want you to show up and grab a bottle and not have a decent understanding of what it's going to taste like,
right? Mm-hmm.
You don't want it to be so far off and be like, oh, this John Jay is completely different than something else.
Right.
So barrel warehouses, where you age them does have a large impact on the flavor of that barrel throughout its life.
Yeah, that's cool.
Totally.
Yeah. I had a question. Oh, no. It was about the great French wine blight of the mid-1800s, which I am sure
and
you know
later,
about.
Later, Cole.
Can you remind me? I don't know what we're
talking about. Okay, so this is why... Sazerac became a rye cocktail.
Oh, because the grapes all... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. There was like some like insect that took over French brandy, basically.
I'm going to tell you stuff, but I'm not going to.
No. He knows, everyone. I just want to joke about that for the most part.
That's exactly right, though. That's why they moved from brandy over to rye whiskey in the Sazerac cocktail.
Yep.
Interesting.
100%. So let's talk about this Abraham Bowman. Coming in here, I actually won on the lottery.
Congratulations.
So I
didn't even know I was going to be
applied,
here. I didn't even enter because I didn't think I was ever going to be here. And then now here I am. And you can still get them, right? People are still coming in.
Yeah,
Wait. You can not
but like,
get them.
Yeah, like pick it up.
If you're part of the lottery.
Lottery winner.
Correct.
Yeah.
So tomorrow is the last day for pickups.
Oh, that's funny.
So I should have waited.
Just in the window for it. And then you're right. So I did lottery them out. So we used to allow people to line up prior to coming in. I didn't find that the fairest way possible because if you had a job, it might not let you be able to show up the night before and spend the night in the parking lot.
Absolutely.
And then also I found that I thought that it might have a better opportunity to get into people that actually love it and enjoy it and will enjoy it versus people that are out there to
flip it or something.
Do something that's not you know, out there for the money aspect of it, which you absolutely should never resell.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And so that's the fairest way. That's how I plan to continue to release these until if y'all have a better idea on how account.
Works for me.
So I just put your name in it every time. Yeah. But besides that, that's how I'm going to try to do it, and at least for the Abrahams and Cast Strength.
No, that's great. That's cool. How many bottles was this? It was like 2,000, right?
It was a good amount. Yeah. What does that number say? It was more than that number.
Bottle number two. Right, so there were dang. More than two.
It was more than two.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay. That's good. I got the other one, I guess. Yeah.
I think bottle number one's down there in the cabinet, right?
Oh, I believe it.
That one.
Yeah.
And then, cool. So to be honest, we took this out of our stash, so that's why they're all low numbers on them.
Ooh, cool. Tell us why you have a stash.
So what we do every time we release some is we hold some back. And we hold some back because we want to give them out for donations to raise money.
That's awesome.
So if there is an incident that happens anywhere in the United States and we we'll try to donate some of these super rare bottles so people can auction them so we can help raise money. So that's the main reason that we have some back stock of these. It's not because I don't want y'all to have them and have everyone enjoy them.
And it's not that big, listeners.
Yeah,
no, not that big a stash. Yeah.
No.
Cabinet, not closet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
But it is kind of like our little retain, and it's not to help further the good nature.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
And he was telling me, Dave was telling me, there's a cider finish one that never got released to the public that is only for like fundraisers and donations and that kind of stuff.
That's right. So we did. So if you really paying attention, we released number 21, and then we skipped 22 because this is release number 23. Mm-hmm. And so that 22 was a cider cask finish. It was only one barrel, and it was very small. And if we had tried to lottery that out, we would have had a lot of very angry people based on the bottles that we have.
In there.
So we thought the best way to do it was we let the employees have a bottle, and then we are holding that. And so that's one of the most rare Abrahams. So if you do see that come up in an auction site, that is us putting it out there to try to help donate that.
That's so cool.
And
that's
by auction, cool. I mean like helping a not.
Yeah.
Sell.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I have a question. What was it? Release 21, was that 2020?
Yes.
And then release 22, never public, was in 2021. And then 3 years without. Or 3 years until the next one.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. I was keeping an eye on it. I mean, since Sweet 16 and Sequential track. Phil, and I was like, I was on top of those
Are
things.
Are you saying I'm not doing my job?
Yeah. I thought it might have been the transition, but I was like, maybe we'll have to make up for this. Yeah.
It absolutely was a transition.
Oh, cool,
right?
Yeah.
So it was really me getting my feet underneath me here, trying to get everything figured out and how it works.
I respect that. Because you don't want to put out something for this line.
I didn't want to try to put something subpar out. And so I was going through. I was tasting those barrels. Brian and I had an idea of what we wanted and what was going to come down the line. And really, it was because I was just so new on how to do a special release like this. It just took me longer than it should have to get it out. Now that it's out and now that I understand the entire process, because there's a lot of there's a lot of work that goes into getting that bottle in, to getting that juice in that bottle behind the scenes, when you have to think about all the federal license that has to go along with it and the state codes and everything that has to go through.
Yeah,
right. I was just so unaware that I started the process too late, and then it was pushed and boom, 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 and then bam. Now we're in 2024, and I missed a year and a half of something, 2 years of release. And so I don't want you to think that's going to happen again. I understand the process. I've got it down.
Cool.
I've got, what's happening next, what's coming up. So,
And we've also had some good A. Smith Bowman cast strength releases, too,
that's
in the meantime.
Right.
So,
that's right. Yeah. I got that cast two out. I was very happy with that one. Again, that's what I was talking about. That was super high proof. That was another one of those hazmat proof ones
that's
that came across, because the barrels were just be able to produce that.
Yep.
That was a 10-year-old. And so then when I went into cast strength number three, I pulled my 10s, and I started tasting them, and I was getting a lot of spice, and I was getting a lot of spice from that, and I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to mellow that out so it kind of gives a difference in number two, but to do that, I need to bring in some 9-year.
Yep.
So I had to put 9-year on there. That's why it says 9, because I had to bring in some 9-year barrels to help smooth it out and make it not as peppery, not as strong, and then, again, drop the proof a little bit. So
was it hazmat prior to that?
I can't remember the exact proof of just those 10 years blended together, but I know when I found this these 9-year-old barrels, I was really happy with what with what they brought to the entire blend overall. And so again, I am continuing to chase the flavor profile. And so I'm not going to chase a proof. Mm-hmm. I'm going to chase to try to make the best possible bourbon, best possible whiskey, yeah. best possible product, right. and put that in the bottle for these really unique blends. Because I do want you to sit around and get a chance to get them and buy them and enjoy them with your friends. And they are so unique and they are kind of hard. And I want it to be a really great, great, great product.
That's great.
Yeah.
So Abraham Bowman French Oak is not a bourbon.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. So this is an experiment.
Yeah.
The experiment was what happens if you age whiskey in different types of barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get some French oak barrels that have char.
Oh.
Let's get some French oak barrels that do not have char.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so because those barrels did not have char,
yep.
I can't call it a bourbon.
Yep. Yeah. So that's the only thing. Was it the standard A. Smith Bowman cat or like juice yeah
going in yes
yeah, yeah.
So
that's
the juice
cool.
was same for that and the other wood experiments that went along with it, like we mm-hmm. call this oak series
okay.
because I have more barrels
cool.
yeah. of the same juice that are just different woods
mm-hmm.
and so and again char no char
mm-hmm.
We'll see if the next one can be a bourbon or not be a bourbon or what happens and so that's why I had to not call it a bourbon and
mm-hmm.
it had to be a whiskey.
And the uncharred French oak, was that new fill?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So it spent its entire life in French oak.
That's cool.
This nice. Is not a finish in French
mm-hmm.
oak. This is Truman Cox put this in his experiment. We still have the barrels if you want to see them.
Nice.
Do I still have those barrels? Maybe not.
That's all good.
we still have, so he put those in, and we can show you where they were sitting and where they were resting.
That's cool.
Stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah. Now I'm excited for what's in the future, too, with the Oak Series.
And you can really thank Brian, right? So he was
mm-hmm.
the one that put the wood, the work in to,
mm-hmm.
to try these different things because, you know, like you said, I've only been here 2 years, and I can tell you it is extremely challenging to not only do our full lineup of bourbon and you know, we're not just doing bourbon here, we're also
mm-hmm.
doing vodka, we're doing the gins,
rums.
We're doing rum
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And so it's very challenging to continue to hit our growth volume numbers and do experiments
totally.
I only have so many man hours that people like I had this notion that all I would do is be like, hey,
mm-hmm.
Neil is one of my processors. Yeah. Neil, I want you to make this grain bill, and I want you to put it in the still, the mash done, do it, and then call me, and I'll taste the juice when it's done, and this is what I want you to do. That's not how we Neil
right.
is too busy making John Jay's, processing John Jay's, making Bowman Brothers.
Right.
So it's literally, I'm in the back of the still house, mashing, cooking, doing these fermentations, pitching yeast. So it's really, it's a hard effort. It's but, you know, it's like a passion of love. I enjoy it.
Totally.
It's a lot more fun than sitting answering emails, which is a lot of the process of being a distiller is answering emails, worrying about finance. And so it's so fun to get back there and be able to cook. But it's just a tough one, and it really is out of love and passion.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm curious about process. Here pretty soon we'll get into this. We normally, you know, like have like an entry buzz, something to get us started a little bit. And we may or may not do that. We'll figure that out. But you personally, when you go in to taste something, when you're pulling your 10 years and you're trying to figure out what's going on and you're getting a little bit of spice, as you lead up to that, what do you do? Do you have a ritual? Do you rinse glasses a certain way? Do you drink something to set you right at first? Is there a process for you in all this?
Is there a process for finding? There's not a ritual. You're right. I don't have like I'm not going to drink coffee this morning.
Exactly.
I'm not going to do that piece because, you know, I typically try not to start tasting at like 8 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
We start at 7 a.m. here. And so if you start tasting barrels at 8, you know, it's not always the best experience.
Right.
It happens. And you make sure the blends are right before they go to the bottling line. But I typically do them in the afternoons. And then you got to wait a little bit of time after lunch. So we do take that into account, especially when we're doing these more unique blends.
Mm-hmm.
Rinsing glasses, that's a little bit more challenging because you're in the warehouse.
Yeah.
So sometimes when when I want to check up on all the experiments, I'll provide a list. And I'll be like, hey, go find these barrels, bring me samples. And then we'll line at the table, and myself and my production supervisor will taste them, and we'll be like, oh, this is good, that's good, blah, blah, blah. But other times, I'm like, hey, can you tell me where these barrels are lying? I'm going to go grab the thief. I'm going to go grab the bung puller, and I'm going to take a Glencairn, and we're going to go find them.
Yeah.
And then we're tasting them. So we're just in the warehouse, dropping barrels, open them up, see if they're right, if not, and then kind of making annotations on what's happening there.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of all over the place on what we're that day brings and how much time I got to go for it.
Cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So one more question before – I hope we can drink the Abraham Bowman first. You know, I've had some – we were talking even before we started recording about Sweet 16, and I've had some other amazing ones, but Sweet 16 is probably one of the top 10 bourbons I've probably ever had.
Yeah, it gets a lot of great reviews. And a lot of people love it, yeah.
Abraham Bowman was a big release, and, you know, you're working your way up – and you're putting out these things that also that you didn't even start. On a scale of 1 to 10, how proud of it are you for Abraham Bowman's this French Oat release? Like, you know,
I mean, that's like asking us, is it my favorite child?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
had to be asked. Though.
I love all children, all my children.
Yeah, exactly.
I love this whole family right here. but you know, we are trying to make it very unique,
and
very special.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that these barrels worked out really well.
That's cool.
And I did have to, like I said, blend them together with char and uncharred.
Yeah.
And again, I did that. Purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to do it to get more volume.
Yeah.
I'm never going to do it for that reason. I'm doing it specifically for taste.
Yeah.
Same thing with proof. I got this question 2 minutes ago when someone was picking up their Abraham. They're like, why did you release it at 100?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, because we tried it at different proofs and we're like, at 100 is where it's the best.
Nice.
And that's the same thing with the barrels, right? You're trying to find when it hits its peak and it's really at its maturity and it's at the best possible time to dump it and to start using it. And that's the exact same thing that we did with that Abraham, is I tried to find the best blends of those barrels and then at what proof to do to make it what I was trying to aim for.
Perfect. I can very much appreciate that stuff. Like, you know, one of the things we do on our typical episodes is we try it with water. And sometimes it's better, you know, especially some of the cask strength stuff. It's like, surprisingly great.
That's the whole reason we had the cask strength, because, you know, I know people love that high proof. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, if you don't want to drink it at 135, you can add water and cut it, or you can put it on ice and just let it sit there and mellow out. And
I remember it was good with both. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Nice. And so you don't have to try it. Like, if you want to see what it's like, go running through that still house and open those barrels, drink it straight neat, or try it at neat.
Yeah.
And then you can only do so many barrels at that before your palate just gets blown out. And
that makes sense.
I got to go do something else. I'll come back to this later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another aspect of it. You know, when you're talking about routine,
you can only
do so many.
Totally.
And then, boom, your palate's blown.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I'm sure y'all do that all the time, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I'm not going to be able to taste 30 different bottles today.
We did a 9
for our
lineup
300th episode.
For our 300th episode, 9 cast strength whiskeys.
Oh.
And then we did one little mini episode afterwards, and I'm like, I have no chance of knowing what
just,
this next one is.
It just blows
your
palate.
Yeah,
right? Doing that high proof stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the exact same thing. You can only do so many barrels.
Yeah.
You can only do that. And then you have to break and you have to come back and be like, all right, was that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so with these
barrels,
it's the same thing. And you're going back and you're like, all right, I shouldn't go in that order. I should go over here and try these. And
exactly.
This lot tastes
And I do that too. When I go through blinds, I'll go A through D.
Yep.
But then after I take a sec and water and whatever, then I'll go D through A. I like to.
Nice.
Sometimes I'll go A and then B, but then back to A to reset and then to C. I like to hop around a
little. That's exactly right.
I totally get that.
And we talked about water. And so the glasses we're going to use today, these are actually our lab glasses, right?
That's
so they're marked on them. There's individual markings. And that's because we do cut. You do need to cut it just so that you know what the proof is going to be like and how it changes. So those are just kind of quick cuts that you can do.
Oh, that's cool.
Throughout the glass, which is kind of neat.
So let's do it. Let's drink Abraham first.
Abraham. All right. So we're not going to open that one because two.
Mm-hmm.
And we might want to
ask. It's for the appearance.
That's right. Yeah. So it looks nice. But I do have this one right here. Grab
which
a glass.
Which is number 8.
Which is number 8. Ooh. Yes, again, we're still very narrow down there. And then, so again, French oak. So what I found was that because it is French oak, as you know, it becomes a lot of cherry notes on the nose. That's also what I found here.
I usually get a lot of floral off of French oak.
Floral, so A. Smith Bowman, because we do triple distill our juice, floral is a very common note that we get with this distillate.
I'm getting Chardonnay off the front.
Is that right?
Chardonnay. French oak is a little like creamy for me usually, I guess in terms of mouthfeel rather than a particular note, but I usually kind of, with like a maker's product, I'll get like a lot of creaminess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I the only one thinking Chardonnay?
I see Chardonnay. You know, it's so hard because you want to, you don't want to lead,
but
you want to give suggestions like, this is what I'm finding. I taste butter and pecans.
Keep your mindset to your own opinions. But I'm in the candy cherry territory.
Getting a little grapey, a little bit. but sometimes with French oak, even though this is first use. French oak. It's not like you use like Armagnac or Cognac barrels and charred some of them.
No.
Each
bottle gets like a whole rundown, right? So it's like, hey, here's the distillate, here's the wood that went in, here's the cooperage. As much information that I have about those barrels, I try to provide. Because not only is it for, you know, the novice coming in that was able to get a bottle, but it's also like for the experts or the subject-matic experts that come in and want to know all those kind of individual details.
Yeah.
And so we try to provide as much as we can about that.
Did you see how many secrets he gestured at us when he said experts? Did you
he said, and he also subject matter experts. Yeah.
Subject matter
Smeeze.
Experts.
Smeeze. Do you use Independent Stave Company?
We have Independent Stave Company barrels in here. The majority of our barrels are coming right now from Cumberland Cooperage.
Okay.
Which used to be Robertson Stave.
Okay.
East Bernstadt Cooperage. I think those are all the same.
Okay.
Same name.
That's cool.
So all in all, this nose is delightful. And I could see how more proof here would have been maybe a little too intense. It stays really light, a little bit of florality. I get a lot of candy cherry off the nose from this, and it's just very bright and vibrant on the nose for me immediately. What do you think about the nose? What are your kind of favorite notes on the nose for this?
Again, I just love how these French barrels turn out, right? It's just so unique versus what our typical one is. You're right, I can see those cherries. I always try to come in with like what my tasting notes were originally, and then I start listening to you, and I'm like, oh, that's right. Oh, I can see that.
We do that all the time.
It's so hard for me to be like, oh, what was I going to say about that? So I always say cherry. You're right. I always say cherry because that was the main component that I smelled when I was first blending these barrels together.
Yeah.
So I took a sip, two sips. Beautifully apple-y. Nice caramel. Very, I don't mean this in a bad way, as opposed to sharply sweet, dull sweet, like a wheat sweet, as opposed to like a high rye sweet or something like that.
Nice.
Really nice. I'll think it, more.
Think more. It, it's tough.
Transitions quickly for me on the palate. I'm more of a experience guy rather than a specific tasting note guy in general. I like to kind of just try to outline what the experience is. And that sip timeline from like from 1 to 10, right there at the landing, 1, 2, 3, a lot of bright fruit. Apple and probably cherry is just carryover from the nose. But it's really bright and fruity right away. But right around like 4 or 5, kind of mid-sip, is where it completely transitions for me away from fruity into the creamy kind of vanilla territory. And then it stays kind of creamy throughout the rest. And the proof point does wonders for me. I do think that the 100 proof here, that it's very full-bodied. There's still a lot going on, even though there's not a lot of intensity to try to punch you in the face right away or anything.
And I tried to make it last longer, right? So I thought it was a little short on the finish. And so I tried to do that by bringing in different, it's just hard. I can do what the barrels produce.
Totally.
And so it's very challenging to try to manipulate it towards other pieces,
there is an idea in my mind that's thinking, are you able to tell us maybe the distribution or the percentages of charred to uncharred in this ish?
That's a great question. I'm trying to remember. Let me do some math real quick.
I don't think I will.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was 40%.
Okay.
No, it was probably 30% uncharred.
Did the uncharred turn out pretty light in color?
No, surprisingly. Really? I was really shocked by that. I was expecting it to have lack of color, and it really wasn't.
That's funny.
Which was really neat. I did like the color of this, like that kind of copper, light copper penny thing.
Terracotta.
But I was expecting it to be not as as pronounced as the char. Yeah. And I don't know if that was just the 12 years of the the timeline that affected it, but yeah.
Yeah. Charred versus uncharred. Mm. Were there, I am sure there are many variables to each in terms of ways that they affect the profile, but if you were to kind of boil it down to just one specific thing for each, what would you say if you were tasting the blend, like this needs more charred or this needs more uncharred? What are you going to get from each of those barrels to affect the blend in the way you wanted it to?
So I had the barrels side by side, and what I did was I took, I had a little pipette, and I was like, let's just pull 20% out here, put it in the charred. What is it doing now? What am I thinking about? All right, let's do a little bit more. Okay, too far. I don't really like where that's going. Let's start again. So I know that I wanted to base it with that barrel that was charred, and then try to augment with the uncharred to try to help, because at 12 years for us, it gets very spicy. And so I really wanted to try to mellow and try to get that, like I said, that finish to last longer.
Yeah.
And when I tried just uncharred, it was good, but there was something missing from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, so we need to combine the two to make that best blend that we can.
So was it the spice that the charred barrels bring more spice?
Oh, absolutely.
And
they definitely did.
The uncharred barrels bring more rich. Creamy, kind
like
of
vanilla.
Vanilla.
It was a cool. good piece that was coming across from those uncharred, and then it really is just trying to blend it together to try to get the best we could.
Even
that's
everything.
Great.
Yeah,
I think it's great. If you win the lottery, you should pick one up
by tomorrow. This isn't even going to air by the time. If you didn't pick up your bottle, I'm sorry. If you're watching this,
this does go into distribution, right?
No, so Abraham, because there are so few barrels and bottles, we really just save that for sale.
Virginia
and through our home place.
That's cool.
Now, we will, I do restaurant sales.
Okay.
So we try, so what I want is when you come to Fredericksburg, Virginia to come see us, because we do complimentary tours and tastings every day of the week.
Every day.
10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, and Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 5.
Beautiful Fredericksburg, Virginia.
I want you to be able to be like, oh, I didn't get the lottery. I didn't get the Abraham. Be like, oh, well, you know what? There's this restaurant downtown that carries us, and they have the Abraham, and they have the cast strength.
Nice.
And so I try to make sure that we blanket downtown Fredericksburg and Virginia as best I can in Abraham's and in cast strengths, so when you're around us, you're able to find them and try them, even if you can't do it sitting at a podcast and doing this. But you can go to a bar or restaurant, hopefully see it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
I went to one last night with my wife. We were on a date night, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're right there.
Was it Abraham, too?
It was. They had both.
Cool.
Was it on the top shelf?
It was not on the top shelf, but it was right there.
Changed their contract right now.
But I knew.
Very eye line right there.
She knew me when I came in, and I was like, that's right. I remember. She's like, yeah, I showed up yesterday and grabbed it. I go, yeah, that's
nice.
Great. She's like, he's walking down the sidewalk. Put all the Abraham on it.
That's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's a great experience.
And it's a 12-year, too. And that shows. Yeah. The age shows on this in a good way. It's not over-oaked. It's beautifully complex, too.
That's what I was worried about, was that over-oaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I said, I did take that gap in time, and I knew that this French oak was going to be ready.
Yeah.
And I was trying to be like, I got to get this moving fast, because I don't want it to go too far past.
Yeah.
And so we got to keep going. We got to go.
Yeah, that's
great.
That's exciting.
So let's prep a little bit. Let's talk about A. Smith Bowman cast strength.
Okay.
So you said you were kind of the guy on the end of batch two.
Correct.
And then batch three, you didn't start for sure, because it's a 9-year at minimum, right? Yeah, so you haven't been here 9 years.
But you started the blending process.
Yeah.
The blending was me, but it wasn't. This is all Brian's juice.
Yeah.
Let me think about that. Yes. So this is all Brian's juice. Brian put these all in back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to do, I tried to do 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I needed some extra to it to get to the profile that I wanted to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, let me go through the warehouse, find some nines, see if that will do it. And again, just like I said, in the lab, trying these blends out and being like, this really does make a good product.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to try to keep it at 10. This was kind of, I'm going to try to keep the next one and the further ones to be 10.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, you can only do what those barrels provide. And so if the 10s weren't the best possible juice and I thought it could be be helped by adding younger, I'll do it. I'm not going to be stuck to chasing a proof or chasing an age statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to put out the best product possible.
Yeah. Do you max like a 125 barrel entry proof on these?
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's our standard entry proof. Now we have played around with that again, like when we're doing experiments, because the variables you can change.
Yeah.
Sometimes different recipes work better at lower proof, we found.
Yeah.
So we'll change that up. But standard bourbon recipe 125
that's
is
cool.
where we're doing our entry proof at.
Yeah.
Are batches generally 1 year apart, or how do the batches work here? When do you come out with new batches?
Castrick, I'm trying to do annually.
That's cool.
Around
the same time every year?
Around the same time. So hopefully this fall, because I think this one came out in January. I was a little late on that one.
Sounds good.
And so hopefully this fall, I'll try to get out a little bit before the end of the year.
Okay.
I have, you know, I got more experimental stuff that I've got in the works.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for, you know, numbers to come through. And then again, what month is this? This is April.
Late
so
April.
That means that in 2 months, I'll start looking at those barrels that I have for
Castrate
and start being like, okay, are these ready? Do I want to use these or do I need to keep looking through? And what else does my inventory look like?
I love that.
How long does that blending process typically take?
Well, I've only done it twice.
Yeah.
Right? So I get my barrels. And we run through the barrels, and I go, yes, 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 no, yes, yes, no, no. And so we try all the barrels, and then we do the blend, and then I think.
Right.
And then I think, and I'm like, oh, how can we do this? What am I hitting? What am I tasting here? What's going to happen? So sometimes, like with two, I was really, two didn't take that long. Three, I wanted to, again, I had a little bit more experience knowing what it was like. And so three took me a little bit longer to think about and how to try to hit the profile I was looking for.
Yeah, that's cool.
No, you gotta love it. So you said here in about 2 months is when you'd kind of start. Maybe takes about 2 months to try and think, and then production kind of ramps up at a certain point. I'm just curious about overall timeline.
So I put together a list of barrels that I think will work.
Yeah.
And then I give it to my team and I say, go find them. And that takes a while.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to run through the rickhouse or the warehouses and like pull them down. So we store our barrels on pallets here. We don't do a traditional rickhouse.
Okay.
And because they're so old, they're typically against the wall, which means he has to pull this whole line down, grab that barrel, put the whole line back, record all that movement so we don't lose anything or move anything, and then bring me the sample. And I'm like, no, put it back. let's put that to the side.
Yeah.
So that takes, you know, a month right there for him just to pull all the barrels that I want to have sampled out. And then it goes into this table where we're sitting right here. We put in all the samples here, start playing around, make sure everything tastes right. And then we typically don't start the full blend because I don't want that proof to drop while it's sitting in a tank or anything like that. So I need to make sure all my federal government paperwork's ready, all my state codes are ready, all my bottling. I have plenty of bottles. I have plenty of labels. I have plenty of tea corks. I have time on my production schedule.
Wow.
And then I'm like, okay, we got all our ducks in a row. Mm. Boom, let's drop it. And so by the time we blend it and put it all into a tank, I only let it sit for, I want to say, 2 days, 3 days before I send it to the bottling line because I don't want that proof to evaporate out because it's so high proof, right?
Yeah,
so we're really just letting it sit in the tank for 1-2 days and then boom, send it down to the bottling line and let's go.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And then we'll just sit on it if we have to and wait for the lottery to open or wait for anything to happen or distribution.
Yeah.
So Castle Strength, we do distribute, right?
Yep.
So number two... there's still some number two cases available for distribution, and then three is still available for distribution nationwide. I think all we're doing is figuring out the allocation on where it's going to be. So you still might be, if you don't live in Virginia, there's a chance in select markets that number three will be in your market.
Yeah.
Now, which ones those are, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's brand management, and they'll figure that part out.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I heard it's all going to Phoenix, Arizona.
So. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
Do you really want that many people in Phoenix searching for it?
That's true.
Oh,
like, we'll bleep that out later. So I'm sure you got a little flack for being sub-hazmat for Batch 3, but who cares?
Really?
Who cares about them?
Oh, just not people much. Online, like,
yeah, I mean, yeah. What do they know?
It's hard, you know.
Who cares?
When you're doing something like creatively like this, you talk about how you try not to like read reviews or totally. Read one of those ones that read reviews on how you're doing and how you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, I take it with a grain of salt. I'm like, I understand. But you know, I'm my hardest critic on myself.
Yeah.
Right? So you're like, hey, what ranking did you give this Abraham? What ranking did you give that Castro?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to say.
Yeah.
But I will say that I'm always trying to do better. Right? Yeah. I'm always trying to do better. I tried to do really good on two, and I tried to do better on three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to continue to try to do better every time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Cool.
Well, let's sip it.
All right.
Yeah. Let's do it.
We're not going to open that bottle, but I have this right here, and these aren't numbered.
What do we got here? What do we got?
That we don't number the cash
ring.
Oh,
okay, okay.
Yeah. Did you? Yeah, we got one.
We got playing glasses, I think. I hope.
Yeah, I've had number one and number two, and number two was, as I remember, just as good as number one. So congrats on that.
Brian did a wonderful job with number one. It was so intimidating to come after that number one because it was so great. I thought I was paralyzed with like fear of being as good, but you know, I put that number two out, and I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
And then this one, number three, I'm very, very happy with how this came out.
Smells great.
Again, it's 135.1 proof, 9 years old. Because I mean, a majority of it is 10 years
mm-hmm.
old, but I did have to bring that nine in for that palate. And yeah, 67.5 proof.
Beautifully apple-y.
The 9 year contribution, not like it matters, but just out of curiosity. Do you think the 9 year contributed 10% of the overall blend, or like 2%?
I would love to tell you like we did with the French oak, but I can't remember how much
that's cool.
how much 9 year I put in there. I know it needed it, and so I did do it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like it was less than 20%.
Yeah.
Right. Because when you're doing it, and what I wanted from that 9 year, I didn't need a large volume. So it's not like half of it is nine. No, there's a very small.
Yeah.
But because I put one barrel of nine,
exactly.
one drop,
one
mm-hmm. pass, I had to say nine.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. My cherry on the general profile here of the line, the cherry note
cherry.
Has turned
sweet
syrupy,
baking apples.
Yeah.
Syrupy cherry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm getting the similar to like Stag, really good like apples, cherries, pie, like very sweet,
baking,
sharply sweet.
Baking spice for sure, bringing in that pie.
I love it. Great nose.
Yeah. And the color, you know, it's a little darker. It's beautiful.
Ooh. Great palette. I mean, it's hot, but it reads like.
It's not flat. It doesn't fall right off. Right?
Yeah.
It's still there. It's still on your tongue. It still coats your tongue really.
Oh,
nicely.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Like that first like proofy tongue coating is, but then it's like. Like I could breathe this one out after. I don't have to like hold that one in to not cough or anything. Like it's it reads.
You said
130
right away.
Yeah. Yeah, it reads like a 130. It's not, which I think is a good thing. Like 140 is crazy sometimes. Like one like a hazmat whiskey sometimes is cool, but sometimes it's like you gotta wait that one out before you cough all over the place. But this is great.
And that's exactly right. And it was coming very high proof.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, we need to. I can't remember if these barrels were super high now that I say that. But I really liked what happened here. And I'm really happy with this whole blend and how it went
mm-hmm.
forward.
Yeah. The mouthfeel is very, well, not very, but it's oily. It's like it's very coaty. And it, when I thought that finish was kind of dying off, it hung in there. Might have even come back up a little bit for just kind of like a dry spice that remained in my mouth.
Yeah.
And right on the landing, too, I was getting kind of a little bit of drying, a little bit of tannins to just feel like it was kind of wicking the moisture out of my mouth a little bit in a way that makes you be like, oh, damn.
Yeah. It's a beautiful sweetness, though. The age is noticeable in a really good way. I mean, it's not that old. 9 to 10 isn't that like crazy old.
No.
But it is mature. Like you can tell this is like it's got a complexity. It's got a progression of the palate that is sweet, and then dry, and then sweet again to me.
Yeah, I can see that. So wait, are you saying that I should have let it sit longer?
I would have had to taste these 10-year barrels.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
There's no going back now. There's no pulling them out.
But I think that peppery note you're talking about is beautiful here, and I imagine it would have been a little too crazy, or a little too
pronounced,
yeah, with the 10-year only. Really nice finish.
Yeah. If you end up blending with fractional barrels, is there something you do with the remaining fraction that's left in the barrel?
I typically don't do fractional barrels. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that barrel's good, I'm taking it all.
Yeah.
Because that would become crazy.
That's good.
Inventory.
Yeah. Right.
Dilemma. Right.
Or you start a Abraham Bowman Infinity line,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy.
That would be interesting. But
that'd
no,
be an Abraham Bowman.
Yeah. Yeah. I picked the right name on that one.
That would be interesting, but no. If I like the barrel, we're taking the whole thing.
That's cool.
And yeah, and then I'll look for ones that were around that, and around that age statement and around that lot, and I'll take a look and see what those taste like as well. And but like even when you go through lots, those barrels are different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because they are so strange, or not strange, it's because they do provide so much flavor and they are so unique that you can see, be like, oh, what happened in that barrel? I don't know. Well, let's get this one, that one.
Yeah, and similarly, when you're pulling your 10 years and you say yes, yes, no, yes, yes, no, when the no's go back up and the no's hit 11 and 12 and whatever, are you keeping those in mind for Abraham's? Is there anything else that like, do they get logged away somewhere as like check back in 3 years, or how does that work?
All right, so what do we do if it doesn't, if I don't think it belongs in this blend, mm-hmm. right?
And actually, to be clear, the cask strength is your highest age stated product, right?
Correct.
Yeah, in general, for like a regular.
We don't really put ages on anything. I think this is the first one.
Sweet 16.
Yeah, we don't really put much age on.
So there's nothing necessarily that it would, you know, get held for a line that exists already. So I guess in the experimental realm, I'm just curious how they kind of end up being used down the road.
Okay, so just because they did not taste what I wanted at cask strength does not mean they're not delicious at 100 proof.
Totally, and
they could be used for a single barrel John Jay.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, there we go. Of course.
Right?
That makes
sense.
Yeah. John Jay has no age statements. So.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So if I say, you know, this barrel is not going into cask, let's try it at John Jay strength, and then boom. Okay, we'll go for that.
That's
but
cool.
But you're right. There are some barrels that do not hit the flavor component, even at John Jay or something else like that.
Yeah.
And so you have to have an idea of what to do with that, right?
Yeah.
You can't just have bad barrels that aren't tasting right sitting there. And you can do a couple things, right? You can blend it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take multiple barrels that taste great and put that one in there and be like, okay, it's still good, but it's not as noticeable, and you're fine. And so you can blend it out in different blends. What else could you do? You could put it in a different barrel. You could rebarrel it or change it into something else, right?
Oh,
so you're like, okay, so it didn't turn out well here. What if I tried to overpower it with a finish, right? So let's put it in this wine barrel, or let's put it in a cherry-flavored something and see if that can do it.
Yeah.
And then those would be my two primary routes for those barrels would be cut it, make sure, see if it can work as a John Jay. If it can't work as a John Day, then you might want to just blend it throughout. Or is it worth trying to experiment with this juice and turn it into something else?
Yeah.
I mean, how much volume do you have, right? Because when you're hitting these 10 years, you're not talking a lot of volume in that barrel.
Yeah.
So it might not work to just put it in another barrel that's half filled or something like that.
Right,
so.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I know that people can generally reach out to someone at Buffalo Trace and ask questions about specific barrels, and they'll tell them this was dumped, or this was distilled on this date and bottled on this date, or barreled on this date and everything. Is that any kind of information that you guys ever offer to the public, where if somebody wrote in an email and to some random person and said, hey, I've got this barrel number for a John Jay Bowman single barrel, like information that you'd offer up as far as...
They don't even list barrels on this thing.
Oh, they don't?
Nah.
Is there a laser code?
There might be.
Man, Okay, let me think about how to answer that.
and to be clear, it's not like you're about to get 1,000 emails.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm worried about. I'm very worried
like,
about
don't
when I
email
say,
me
when I say when I show you how to do it that yeah. you're going to look at it and then email. And then I'm going to have to go through. So
yeah.
we are very manually entry, right? So we have yeah. a large Excel mm-hmm. document that's multiple backups that has nice. All of our barrels and all of our pieces. And then from that, you're right. Each one of these bottles is laser coded.
Yep.
And that laser code, I am able to track it all the way back to the barrel it came from.
That's yeah. cool.
Is that a process where I can just type a lot code in and it'll tell me what the barrel is? No.
Yeah.
It's very multiple spreadsheets looking through, figuring it out. So it can be done. We can do it. And if you do have a problem with that, 100%, I'll go back and find that barrel mm-hmm. and figure out what happened in
yeah.
the process.
Good point.
Those
That's
are
cool.
extremely rare things that happen, but
right.
we have to be able to do that. Because not only because I don't want to put out a bad product, and you know, if something happens, I do need to be able to track it back there.
Yeah.
If you look at it, yes, you can figure it out. I mean, you won't be able to figure it out, but I can figure out what that barrel is.
Yeah.
And it's all based on the L lot code there
mm-hmm.
at the very bottom.
That's right.
But yeah. it doesn't say the specific barrel.
Mm-hmm.
It says
right.
the date, and then it says the bottling lot.
Yeah.
And from the bottling lot, then I can track back the barrel that it went that it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then yeah. I have to find that bottling lot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
interesting.
So I've always wanted to ask a distiller this. single barrel product.
Yep.
Let's say you have a 375 milliliters left on the barrel. What do you do with that 375 milliliters?
Do you want the romantic answer or do you want the real answer?
I want the real answer. Tell us the truth.
Yeah.
You're like, you can't handle the truth.
People need to know.
Yeah.
Just
pour it on the ground.
No, absolutely not. What happens to that? Well, it's a single barrel.
Yep.
Right? So it would go into a blend.
That's
so
cool.
If we have at our, when we go see our, when we go see our bottling line, you'll
mm-hmm.
see that there's a tank set off to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And that tank set off to the side is when you do your transition
That's
from
cool.
one product to the next.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that tank will then go into a blend. Typically, if it's a John Jay, that there's a little bit left over, it'll go into a Bowman Brothers.
Yep.
Yeah.
If there's a little bit of Bowman Brothers, because that is a blend, we can typically use that.
Yep.
Sometimes we can put it into port barrels, and you can turn into an Isaac. It just depends on
That's
what
cool.
we're processing at the time and what
yeah.
makes most sense for
mm-hmm.
that juice that's sitting there.
Cool.
We will not blend those barrels or blend barrels
yeah.
in the bottle.
Yeah.
How long is Isaac finished typically?
3 to 6 months.
Okay.
So it just depends, right? So Isaac is one of the most complicated for it's a port barrel finish,
yeah.
right? So we bring barrels in from Portugal.
Nice.
And then we take 4-year-old whiskey and we fill those port barrels
mm-hmm.
and then we let them sit from 3 to 6 months. And then because port barrels, just like any other barrels, are so variation
mm-hmm.
in flavor,
yeah.
What we do to try to blend that out is we have a large wooden tank called a fooder.
Mm-hmm.
We allow it to blend in that fooder prior to being pulled across. So it's in that fooder, it's almost like a Solera. We'll pull half
yep.
of it out, we'll send it to bottle, put more on top, we'll pull half
yep.
out over and over.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And we would go through, I'll show
I
you.
I think I've seen that tank thing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
We'll
yeah.
take a gander.
No. You're doing great stuff.
I know, yeah.
I appreciate
that was fantastic.
It.
Doing great stuff.
I feel like we didn't talk about cast strength very much, but I mean, it's
fantastic.
It's exactly how good you'd expect it to be.
Yeah.
It's so high proof, full bodied, it's oily, it's got all the
yeah.
cherry notes that you want. It's got
I would compare it to batch
age.
1 and 2.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's, I mean, yeah, what do you expect out of a 135 proof high rye
9+ year
bourbon? Yeah, like it's great.
Yep,
it's delish.
And it turned out really well. And like I said, I was very, very happy with that cash 3. But
mm-hmm.
I'm gonna continue to improve. I'm gonna try to continue to improve. Continue to try to
totally.
Master this blending experience and blending process
yeah.
to try to figure out the best way possible to get really great whiskey and bourbon in your hands.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll kind of close it out there. If you can get your hands, especially on the A. Smith Bowman cast strength, I only say that not because Abraham Bowman's not as good. I only say that because Abraham Bowman's only sold in Virginia, basically. but if you can get your hands on either of these, get your hands on them. And I mean that. They are they are standout bottles. I would pay easily as much as they're worth on either of them. And as I have on both of them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, or at least I have on Abraham Bowman. I don't think I've ever technically bought a Smith Bowman.
Yeah, did you know they sent a media sample of a whole bottle?
Well, yeah, batch one, they sent me a whole bottle. I was like, okay, I won't say anything. Like, don't get it. Exactly. Batch two, they sent me a sample, like a 100 milliliter
and actually,
or something like that.
You know, there's I know you're trying to close out, but there's one more question I wanted to ask
please.
That I thought of earlier. So my first experience with A. Smith Bowman was through Cole.
Yeah,
because that media sample headed his way, and he and I had met up, and we were friends, and we started to swap whiskeys back and forth, and he was able to send me two ounces of the batch one.
I only recently finished that bottle.
I know, yeah. And so that was a very fun experience for me, and I was curious if you remember, however long ago it may have been, your first experience with A. Smith Bowman. How did they get on your radar, and how did you get interested in them in the first place?
So I was in Sazerac. So I was at the Sazerac house, and because I needed to learn the back end of a this is not the romantic answer, but
it's okay.
Because I needed to learn a system that we use in Sazerac for inventory control and purchasing and everything like that, I needed to be trained on it.
Totally.
And there's a lady here, her name's Debbie Stevens. She's one of the most she's an amazing lady, and she's one of the longest tenured employees here. And so they're like, well, why don't you go up to A. Smith Bowman and train with Debbie? And so I got to come up here.
Cool.
Brian was kind enough to do pretty much this right here.
That's
he
great.
Sat me down, let me try all his products that they make, and then he brought me through the warehouse. He kind of took me under his wing prior to us, you know, knowing that this whole thing would happen, that I would come in and take the reins. But that was my first experience with A. Smith Bowman. Was coming in here and sitting down with Brian Pruitt, the master distiller, and
that's
him walking me through and saying, this is what it tastes like, this is what I'm aiming for, and all that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
And you
it's
were like
really, really an amazing experience.
You were like, I hope to be you someday.
I did. And then I said, now I have to go sit and learn a computer system with Debbie. So I'll see you in 6 hours.
On to the real fun
stuff.
That's right.
I guess my last question is, he doesn't work for Sazerac anymore, apparently. But did you ever meet Mark Brown?
He still works for Sazerac.
He does?
Yeah. He just moved.
He's not the CEO anymore.
He's not CEO.
Yeah.
He's now his title is chairman.
Nice.
But I was on a meeting with him. What day is today? Today's Saturday.
Uh-huh.
I was on a meeting with him on Thursday.
That dude's my homeboy.
He's great.
He's a great man.
Yep. Good people.
British too.
That's right. And now Jake Wentz.
Bleep that out, everyone. No, kidding. No, we love scotch and all that stuff on the podcast as well.
No, Mark Brown's great. And then now we're under the helm of Jake Wentz, and so he's also doing amazing things and great stuff.
That's great.
Very cool.
Very excited for the future.
Yeah, I have had some contact with Mark, and he's an incredible person. Really nice guy. So that's cool. Well, I guess we'll close it out there. I hope that you get the chance to either try Abraham Bowman, listeners, or A. Smith Bowman, Cask Strength. But if not, honestly, Isaac Bowman, which I imagine is kind of, it's the cheapest of the standard core line.
Don't say cheapest.
Yeah. No. It's the least expensive. Yeah, best value. No, Isaac Bowman is worth picking up.
Yeah.
Bowman Brothers, of course. John Jay, the single barrel. Absolutely. I hope our listeners get an opportunity to get that.
Yeah, and I hope that if you won the lottery, you get down here and pick up your Abraham Bowman.
By tomorrow.
By a couple
by the time this
ago.
Comes out, it'll be too late.
You hope for anything?
I hope that y'all are able to come back. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, try everything, but you got that one in front of me. So, but no, I really do hope y'all come back. This was a lot of fun. And it's great to sit down with people that appreciate the complexity that goes into trying to do what we're doing here.
Yeah. I hope, David, you keep up the good work and do as you've already done. And you will, great things will happen as they already do. But most of all, listeners, I hope that our love of whiskey lifted your spirits.